This is the E-Commerce Brain Trust, a podcast about building momentum online for established consumer brands. Join our hosts and their expert guests for high-level conversations about e-commerce strategies, trends, and innovations. Access our brain trust and boost your brand's e-commerce potential.
Welcome to the E-Commerce Brain Trust podcast. I'm Julie Speer, Head of Retail Marketplace Services here at Acadia.
And I'm Jordan Ripley, Director of Operations for our retail team.
Today, we're joined by AJ Patel, VP of Global Growth at UBeauty, one of our clients here at Acadia. UBeauty is a fast-growing cult skincare brand. I happen to be a happy customer. Founded by Tina Cheng Craig, and it's focused on premium beauty products that lead the industry in sustainability. AJ has a long history of working in the premium beauty industry, both as global head of e-commerce and director of analytics, previously for beauty brands in Unilever's prestige beauty portfolio. And we're excited to get his perspective on all things e-com today. Welcome, AJ.
Hey, thanks for having me today.
Great to talk to you in this forum, and we appreciate you taking the time to meet with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're someone that actually started out in the world of analytics and then moved into a more generalist role in e-com for the brands that you oversaw. Before we dig into e-com, can you talk to us a little bit about how you made that transition?
Yeah, I obviously started in analytics and I saw kind of a cap in terms of how far I could go within analytics and data science. And I definitely always had kind of a more commercial mindset. I had my own business when I was a young kid, and I started something when I was 12 years old, which obviously didn't succeed, but I always had that entrepreneurial mindset. When I was looking at additional opportunities within Unilever's prestigious portfolio, after I'd been director of analytics for a few years, one of the opportunities which was presented to me actually was a global head of e-com role. And I felt that it really was a good utilization of my analytical skill set, as well as kind of the greater commercial acumen that I have as a result of being more entrepreneurial in my career too. So it's definitely been a different transition. I wouldn't say it's a very typical path that a lot of people have taken, but I also had a really great mentor who took a very similar path to me. And I think that having someone who's done that and started out in analytics and ended up in more of a commercial role, and him kind of helping guide me in that direction, really helped.
I would think that the world of Amazon playing heavy in your e-com roles would marry nicely with the transition from analytics, though. With all the access to data from so many angles, and especially the intro of AMC, that must have been almost like coming home to your analytics soul with AMC.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, AMC is fantastic. There's so much you can do with it, too. It's really an underutilized solution, I think, for a lot of brands and businesses. So, yeah, I think AMC is a game changer for businesses and definitely should be utilized more and more by brands.
Yeah, absolutely. Both conversation for another day a bit. I'll make a hard left here and go back to a bit more about UBeauty. Can you talk to me a little bit more about UBeauty itself and how you represent it on various online channels, and maybe by offering an overview of UBeauty, the brand itself, and how you position it in your space and to your core customers?
Yeah, absolutely. UBeauty is a luxury skincare brand, and really the value proposition and where the brand came from was the invention of this technology called Siren Capsule Technology. Siren Capsule Technology is basically a unique delivery mechanism to target damaged areas of your skin. So traditionally, skincare brands, you apply everything all over your skin, and it's going to impact both your healthy and your unhealthy areas of your skin. With Siren Capsule Technology, it's basically attracted to free radicals and problem areas where you have issues with the skin. And so you're only impacting those areas of the skin using a lot lower level actives. So it's great for consumers who have trouble with sensitivity and allergy and things like that. It's really, really great technology because it utilizes such low levels of actives while delivering high efficacy for the consumer. you kind of think of it as weed killer, right? When you spread weed killer, you're really trying to target specific areas of your lawn, and you're only going to spray weed killer where you have weeds. This is the same principle with U-Beauty. You're only trying to impact the areas where you have problem areas in your skin.
I like that positioning. Not sure if we put that necessarily in the content on the page of the weed killer for your face. But that is a great analogy of how to explain how it works, though. I like that.
Yeah, definitely.
And I have a follow-on question for that, which is the customer that you're interacting with online is not going to be the same on each channel, right? Like your D2C customer is likely going to look and have an awareness of them, the UBD brand, that's different than an Amazon customer or a pure play customer. And given that this is a brand that's like built on innovation, has a very unique selling proposition, do you just try to merchandise that in the same way on each channel? Are you trying to meet the customer where they're at? Like, how does that actually manifest in terms of how you position yourself on each of those?
Yeah. I think education is really the core of the business. Because we are a luxury skincare brand, we're a higher price point. We have a lot of which we invest into R&D on a consistent basis. We have different educational tactics that we utilize depending on which channel we're marketing to the consumer in and what type of consumer it is. So Blue Mercury, we're presenting in-store for the most part. They obviously do have an online business. And we're really showcasing the product and how to utilize it. We're explaining the technology in maybe a little bit more meaningful way. What we've developed on our e-commerce site is we obviously have great educational content on the PDPs, and we also have kind of the esthetician program where consumers are able to connect directly with an esthetician and utilize them to kind of develop a regimen and to engage with them. We have consumers who engage with those estheticians 6 months after they've purchased a product, just giving an update of where they're at within their skincare journey. And for Amazon, I think Amazon's a great platform overall. And they're saying it's around 14% of total beauty sales right now. So it's a great place for both acquisition and retention. I historically thought of Amazon as really a replenishment channel when I was with Unilever, just because we had more established brands. But nowadays, I see the opportunity with acquisition on the channel too. And I think that there's a consumer or subset of consumers, which is really, really highly utilized, like the Prime network and things like that. And they're really ingrained and they're only going to purchase things from Amazon. So it's really a new touch point with the consumer and a new area to facilitate that kind of conversation. We do have a ton of A+ content and education on those product detail pages on Amazon. We also try to not just utilize it as a replenishment channel, but we also try to educate the consumer around the technology and the brand through Amazon too now.
You've kind of touched on this with mentioning A+, but kind of leaning into that more, what are some of the investments that you found to be most effective? One, you're a unique product, you are a premium product. What are some of the investments that you've seen translate and be most effective for beauty?
Yeah, I think ultimately we have super elevated creative. I think that as a luxury brand, it really is important. We have super great branding. We have a fantastic branding team and creative team who really support those two areas. In addition to that, we're also investing a lot in terms of video content. We know that utilizing video content on our product detail pages is going to ultimately improve our conversion rate and help drive performance that way too. And for a brand which has a little bit longer of a tail in terms of there's a longer consideration cycle for the consumer, it takes multiple hits for us to really get a consumer to convert. I mean, it's not like an impulse purchase, which you're paying $20 for. You really need to have a lot of educational content front and center through that A+ content. We've done a ton of investment and a ton of work to bring that front and center for the consumer.
I know U-Beauty, you also invest heavily in social media, in influencer marketing. Do you have any success stories, war stories, any stories for what's worked really well on that angle of investment in awareness strategies, what's gone really well or what to avoid?
Obviously, having a founder who is an influencer and a well-known public figure has really helped with the brand. We also have a spectacular R&D and technology team who really does help. facilitate a lot of kind of the growth and education that Tina presents to the consumer through the influencer channel. But we have had a really great success with both her friends. And also, I think that one of the other things is that a lot of influencers who we gift have tried the product and really, really become great spokespeople for the brand and allies of the brand. And we've utilized them extensively to scale and grow the influencer channel from an awareness perspective. Not just that, too, they also help drive bottom of funnel conversion, too, right? So we oftentimes partner with them. Once we truly do believe that they are an advocate of the brand, we will partner with them on paid placements and things like that to really kind of push the message further.
AJ, do you have any channels that you feel like either are not a fit for eBeauty or you've tested it, you just feel like you're struggling to unlock and if you're comfortable sharing?
I would say TikTok is a challenging marketplace. TikTok shops in particular, it's definitely a growing marketplace, but for luxury in particular, it's a marketplace which is challenging in two ways. Number one, it's really an impulse purchase for a lot of consumers who purchase on that marketplace. And with a brand that has a longer consideration cycle, it's tough. And number two, the content which is produced there is very different than what we're traditionally used to producing. We've tried to adapt content and go with kind of some of the trendier content. We just haven't seen that it's resonated super well with the luxury consumer. Listen, we're still going to continue to test it and still going to continue to hope that it's a scalable and growth channel for us. But it's definitely moving away from just having Gen Z on that platform. You're starting to see a lot of Gen X and millennials utilize a platform in a more meaningful manner. So there's definitely is a representation of our target consumer, but the shops in and of itself is a tough channel to make work.
Are there any channels that either emerging channels for you that or existing that you haven't really tapped into quite yet that are you're excited about because they're not as saturated or you just see some untapped potential for you?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that definitely, obviously Meta Shops is one which is really performing quite well for us. We also utilize like accelerated checkout platforms like Fermat. They're really great in developing custom landing pages and educational content pages for our Meta ads too. One channel which is really, really interesting is the esthetician program that we have. We basically partner with estheticians. We have two on our staff right now, or a few on our staff right now, who support this channel for us. And with a brand which has, like I said, that longer consideration cycle, really having that personal relationship and that personal communication with the consumer is something which has proven super beneficial for us. We're seeing super high conversion rates when a consumer makes it through that funnel and consumers who start through that funnel. And we're also seeing significantly higher repurchase rates and customer lifetime value. It's a win-win all around. I would say that we're trying to bring that in-store kind of cosmetic counter experience to a digital channel too. So that's been something which has really worked well for us.
How does someone find that channel? Is that part of your brand site?
Yeah, it's on our website. It's actually in the navigation. You know, it's a consult with an esthetician is the kind of menu option which consumer would select, and they go through that. And it's free service. We don't charge for it, but the estheticians are really going to be truthful and honest. And if it's not maybe a brand fit, they would feel like there's other products out there which would be a better recommendation. They're also going to recommend that to you too. So it's not just about promoting eBeauty. It's really about promoting skin health.
That's very interesting. Do you know of many others in the space that have a feature similar to that?
There are a few out there. There are a few. And I think that it's conversational commerce is kind of what it's called. It's growing in terms of the number of brands and businesses that are utilizing it, especially for like more luxury and higher AOV brands and items. I think that it makes a lot of sense.
Well, and going back to your point about the longer tail, the amount of consideration and the need for education. If you want the customer lifetime value to be there, investing in that education upfront like that, it's a really smart move.
Yeah.
Investing in that. Very interesting.
One of the other channels, which I think is really interesting for us too, is Try Before You Buy. It's also available through our site. So we're trying to get product into consumers' hands. It's also a free program for the consumer. They're able to pick out and trial one of our hero products and utilize that for a week-long regimen, or that's how much product typically we give to them. For UBeauty, you typically see results within 3 to 6 days, so it's really great. But we see super high conversion rate from that too.
Do you prefer something like that rather than a sort of like, there's all those subscription models that do trial your Ipsy's here, your Birchbox, that sort of thing? Does that have a place in your ecosystem as well to try to acquire customers, or where do you see that versus like your own trial program?
I think it does, but it's just a more targeted approach that we need when and if we were to partner with an Ipsy or Birchbox or Just Fab or whoever it is, right? I think that from that perspective, we need to make sure that we're targeting the correct demographic, because there's a lot of younger consumers who may not be the correct fit for UBeauty in terms of what we see as our demographic profile. There's also a lot of coupon shoppers and things like that who are really focused on value. And with a luxury skincare brand like UBeauty, that's maybe not the correct consumer for us that we're marketing to. So yes, there is a subset of those subscription box consumers that would be a great fit for UBeauty, but it's not for everyone.
That kind of highlights another topic that we wanted to touch on, which is there's some subset of tactics that are more value plays and some subset that are more premium plays. Like, do you have a hard line of like, these are tactics we'll never do because they're not a fit for a premium brand like UBeauty?
Yeah, we definitely do have some tactics which, aren't right for our brand or for our business. We won't do a ton of discounting. We have 2 tentpole discount moments a year. You know, I think that there is certain places or partners that we would never partner with just because it's not the right brand fit. We wouldn't want to be seen at like a Walmart or a mass market store. That's just not who we are as a brand and as a business. And we pick and choose kind of tactics, partnerships, and things like that with a fine tooth comb, I would say.
Yeah. And a lot of that, of course, is like borne out on your experience and your instinct in the beauty space. But I'm curious, when we think about also your background as analytics and using data to kind of drive your decision making here, can you give a little bit of a background of like your data stack, what you're building on your side to keep tabs on your customers, understand where the opportunities are, and like how you approach that in your role?
Yeah, we do have a data warehouse that we've built out, and we started utilizing that last year. And it contains a ton of customer profile information around kind of our customers that have purchased in the past, etc. And we utilize that to really hyper-target and personalize messaging depending on the type of consumer that we're marketing to. We have products which are as low in price as $68, which is our like plasma lip compound, you know, going all the way up to $228 with our resurfacing compound, and even higher if you're looking at kind of bundles, duo sets, and things like that. $68 is a lower barrier to entry, so we're able to market to maybe a broader clientele versus a $228, which is a little bit more niche in terms of the consumer that's willing to spend that much for that type of product. Like I said, we don't typically discount. But once a consumer does trial our product, what I've seen versus my previous days in Unilever is that we have one of the highest replenishment rates out of any business out there. The consumers who trial us love the brand, and that's why also Try Before You Buy is such a great solution for us.
Mm-hmm. How do you look at that from a omnichannel perspective, considering that a lot of that data warehousing and retention marketing works great for D2C, where you control the customer information and you can activate on media channels accordingly? But you mentioned the promise of AMC earlier. What's your perspective on how AMC plays in this, how Amazon plays in this? Have you made efforts around that? I'm curious to get your take on what you're excited about
there. Yeah, inevitably, what I would love to do is utilize AMC clean room instance and merge basically our Amazon and e-commerce data to see what that customer overlap looks like. We haven't done that yet with UBeauty, but that's definitely something that we would like to do in the future, is get that full omnichannel perspective. I think for retail in particular, it's tough to measure, But we do measure the efficacy of media using single market tests or multi-market tests where we have a holdback market, and we measure the impact on both retail and .com, and we see kind of how heavying up media investment in particular markets impacts performance from an omnichannel perspective. Our retail business is still growing, so we're still a startup. We're still a younger brand. We haven't even hit 5 years in terms of how long we've been around, and we're still expanding the portfolio of products that we have and expanding the distribution. From that perspective, I think that there's still a lot more work that needs to be done. We're still in the earlier stages, I would say.
I have a question for you, which I've had many during this conversation. But as someone who has an analytics background, I am someone who's always been on the investment in organic marketing soapbox. It's what I enjoy very much about Amazon, especially the evolution of the opportunity over the past number of years. And you've identified a few different times during our conversation today the key role that investment in A-plus content has played for you, Beauty, how important it is. Often we find that it's difficult for brands to justify that investment because it's hard to measure the results. It's hard to track. You measure the results of the investment in media, it's clear. The numbers tell the story. But measuring the investment in organic marketing efforts and optimization of PDPs is much more difficult. So as someone with an analytics background, I'm curious, how do you approach measuring the returns on those activities, the returns on investment in branding? What does that look like for you?
Yeah, I think some things we can qualitatively measure. From a quant perspective, definitely looking at the conversion rate impact and seeing what the conversion rate lift is as a result of introducing A-plus content is going to be kind of your best bet. But from a qualitative perspective, you can also do brand surveys, which we've done a ton of, to understand whether consumers heard about us, where they shop, what messaging resonated with the consumer. We apply all of those learnings across all of that A-plus content, and we utilize that also to decide where we're going to invest our dollars. If a consumer says that this educational message really resonated with them, and we do both kind of aided and unaided awareness kind of studies, that's something which we'll incorporate within the A-plus content that we put on our website, just knowing that that's messaging that resonates. But also we divide or calculate how much investment we're going to invest in through the various portfolios channels based upon kind of the performance and what we're seeing also from this qualitative data too. So it's not just all quant. There's a little bit of qualitative study that needs to be done too, I would say.
Clear methodology applied from the very beginning, from determining what you're going to target to how you approach the update, the optimization itself. Very interesting. On that track, maybe this is a good place for us to round out our conversation today. We started at the beginning of background in analytics, moving into e-com. What are your key metrics for measuring performance? What are the key metrics that you like to track for measuring the health and performance of your accounts? Let's focus on Amazon specifically.
Amazon specifically, yeah. No, definitely. I think for us, what we typically like to use is more of tacos. We don't look at everything just paid search in silo and the performance of paid search in silo. I don't think that's necessarily the best way for any business to run, especially with our brand. Like I said, we have a longer consideration cycle, so oftentimes you're not going to necessarily see attribution within the period of time that you have with Amazon. We do utilize tacos, and then we also utilize, based upon our portfolio revenue and portfolio margin, utilize that data to determine where we're going to invest too. So for example, we see a higher distribution of revenue coming through our resurfacing compound. We'll heavy up there if it's a lower percentage of our spend. That portfolio model has really worked well for us as a business, and Arcadia has definitely been supportive in implementing that for us too. So yeah, we've seen really great growth on our Amazon business last year. I mean, we were showing close to triple digits growth on Amazon. We're trying to continue to scale and grow. And I think that one of the things which a lot of teams also do is they spread themselves too thin with marketing investment. So what we've done is we've really taken kind of a focused, narrow approach. Let's really get sponsored product ads and sponsored brand ads to work before really looking at additional opportunities and additional channels of investment on the Amazon platform. Because there's so much low-hanging fruit, which I think that if you're splitting up your money across too many different channels or too many different tactics, you're not going to really perform as well as you could if you have that narrow focus.
It's easy to get distracted by the all the options in front of you, but you have to pay enough to play and let the data tell you where to go. It's interesting with the metrics you shared. I did not hear ROAS.
Definitely ROAS is there, right?
I'm okay with it.
We do look at that. And we obviously look at CAC too. We want to make sure that we have a healthy CAC and customer lifetime value. So for our digital business, our primary KPI is CAC over AOV for new customer acquisition, just because we're in such a big growth phase right now. We consistently measure our customer lifetime value because that's super important for us to understand where do we kind of hit that profitability with a consumer in their journey and how much profitability are we generating or expecting over a 3, 5, 10 year period. And we've modeled that out actually to extended periods of time based upon data that we have historically seen and fall out in terms of customer churn and lapsed customers and things like that. I wish we had 100% of consumers that stayed on with us, but even for a brand like us that has exceptional retention rates, there is still a drop off. So yeah, we've modeled that out and we have a really, really strong understanding of what allowable CAC is and what our CAC over AOV should look like for us to fuel and drive the business in a profitable way. I think e-commerce businesses in general, one of the challenges that they have is that a lot of them focus on just growth, growth, growth. Nowadays, it's really important in driving profit too, and to having a healthy business, especially for a brand, if you want to get acquired in the future by a Unilever or by a L'Oreal, it's really important to have those healthy bottom line KPIs.
Profitability is slightly important for the health of a business. And also what you're underscoring here is that one metric doesn't fit all channels, that it's important to understand the purpose of each channel and your overall strategy
exactly. And
understand the metrics by channel and the role they play.
Yeah.
AJ, I really, really appreciate your time today. Jordan, thank you for joining us in the conversation as well. And look forward to having you back again one day, maybe when we enter a conversation about clean rooms and AMC.
Absolutely. And it's been a pleasure to work with Arcadia or / Bobsled, I guess, over the past 5, 6 years. So you guys have been wonderful partners.
You as well. It's been quite the journey.
I know. Yes. Thanks.
Thank you.